Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, while the world's attention focuses on what's happening in Gaza, the West Bank and Lebanon, that invariably means that some other parts of our planet are getting less attention. In Sudan, a brutal civil war has been raging since last year. It's left 150,000 people dead, with reports of mass rapes and many other atrocities. 11 million people have been displaced internally. Over 3 million have fled Sudan, and half the country is on the verge of famine. It is, by any measure, the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Dominic McSorley is a former country director of Sudan. Good afternoon, Dominic.
Good afternoon.
Is this affecting the entire country, Dominic?
Absolutely. I mean, the fighting, as we know, that broke out between the warring factions in Khartoum in April 2023 really spread like a cancer rapidly across the country and has pretty much engulfed almost every state within that. Where concern is working in the south and South Kordofan and in Darfur has been the subject of some of the most intensive fighting. And as you say, this is a situation that is now rapidly gone out of control. The fact that famine was declared in North Darfur in August, and there are estimates that there are at least 13 other areas across the country that are at risk of famine. And to be brutally frank, famine declaration means that children have already been dying in large numbers. And starvation should demand outrage and action, and yet there's almost silence on this issue.
Yeah, and presumably with all that, there's a very real risk of various diseases as well.
Yeah, I mean, the country is, you know, cholera was an outbreak that agencies such as Concern had to respond to. You've got a mass movement of people, as you mentioned, 8 million internally displaced, many of them living in rudimentary shelter. You've more almost 3 million people who are living in refugee camps that, frankly, the level of funding is insufficient to provide them with the protection and safety and health demands that they need. And then within the country itself, the health system has completely collapsed. So this is just a recipe, as we know, for absolute disaster. And I do think the one thing we do need to point out is there are a lot of agencies on the ground. There's an extraordinary amount of work that is being done. Access is challenging, but not impossible in all areas. And we've got to ensure that there is a much greater attention, mobilization of supplies and resources to both respond and prevent further deaths.
How do you get supplies in there at the moment? I mean, for instance, is Khartoum, is it relatively safe to get supplies in that way?
Now, Khartoum has really been a no-go area since the beginning of this crisis. And there are local groups. I mean, the one thing, you know, I've been working in Sudan on and off for many years. And the one thing I really have to say is, you know, there is a real culture of community assistance. And we're seeing that play out in areas such as Khartoum and in other areas. And agencies are providing communities with that level of support. But frankly, this community resilience that the Sudanese have is being tested hugely. It's a vast country. It was always expensive to operate there. It can take weeks to get trucks from Port Sudan to the areas that we're working in. And now you've got the complications of working in an active war zones where you have multiple checkpoints, where there's been restrictions, for example, in neighbouring Chad of bringing the trucks across. This has really complicated the relief effort.
Yeah. And so from week to week, are certain parts of the country changing hands in terms of which faction controls it?
Yeah, and certainly it's one of the challenges, I think, for organizations such as Concern, because we're operating in Port Sudan, and that is currently under the control of the Sudanese armed forces. Darfur is very much under the control of the rapid support forces. And therefore, you back into humanitarian principles, we have to discuss, dialogue, explain what our purpose is, ensure that, you know, we're operating as effectively and neutrally as possible, where we're targeting people that are in real need. And that requires, you know, a lot of negotiation and explanation, but it is possible. But it is an extraordinary, and I have to say, I really have to pay tribute to the concerned staff, the majority of them are Sudanese, because they're often the thin line between starvation and survival, between hunger and hope. And we've got to ensure that they're supported to the extent that we can at an international level.
And on both sides, what's the general attitude towards aid agencies? Is there any suspicion towards them?
I mean, there. You know, I think one of the things that we have to be very careful about is in relation to kind of advocacy and calling out abuses. Mm. These are well documented already by the UN, by human rights organizations. But we've got to remember that for concern, the safety and security of our staff and the communities work with is paramount. Does it mean that we're silent? No. It means that whatever conversations we're having with donors, with the Irish government, whatever, are generally held behind closed doors. So we are calling out the consequences of this conflict, but our mission is to provide life-saving assistance, which we are doing to hundreds of thousands of people, and ensure that we are able to continue to do that.
Yeah, and those internally displaced people, Dominic, if they move to another part of the country, are they finding that suddenly that part of the country is unsafe and they have to move again?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad you said that, because the reality is for many of these displaced, they have been displaced not once, twice, but three or four times. And we've seen, you know, that is a pattern of conflict. We see it in Gaza, and this has been played out for the last 18 months in Sudan. And every time people move, you know, their capacity and their resilience weakens even further. I mean, our staff, concerns Sudanese staff, many of them have become refugees themselves in Chad, and many of their families have been displaced as well. And so this has. But the one thing I will say is conflict has disrupted kind of local capacity, the health facilities that were support that are being supported by concern, but not completely destroyed. Mm. And I was in health centres where you have highly trained local health staff who are there saying, "We're here, we're ready to work. We need to be supplied," and we have to remember that that capacity has not gone yet.
Yeah. What's that? Excuse me. In terms of the weather, how hot does it get? Is there a rainy season? You know, do you have to deal with those kinds of conditions as well?
Yeah, and it's interesting because the rainy season, in some ways, brings one challenge is, you know, because most of the roads are unpaved, you know, you're driving through very, very rough terrain. I think the good thing about the rainy season is it tends to reduce military activity. Mm. So, you know, there's a dual benefit in that. And certainly the flooding that has affected parts of the country has been. So we're in a world where both climate and conflict are now driving these crises, and hunger is on the rise. And, you know, as a country of Ireland, we're well experienced in our own history of the impact that that has, not just on that generation, but for generations to come.
Also as well, and I know it's kind of, you're literally in a firefighting situation, but, you know, given the reports of horrific actions being conducted there, mass rapes, massacres, etc., there's a generation there of traumatized people as well. And I suppose in the short term, there's probably not that much you can do for them.
Well, I mean, I think being there, having a presence, as much as anything, you know, when the concerned white Land Cruisers come in with our staff, there's a sense of witnessing. There's a sense of outside monitoring that provides a degree of reassurance. But absolutely, you know, particularly the impact on women has been vicious and ferocious. And the psychological impact on women and children in particular is something that when there is a peace and when there is some kind of resolution will have to be dealt with because it is profound and it's deeply disturbing.
Yeah. Now, as I understand it, the civil war was essentially a revolutionary movement that split, that got rid of the previous ruler, and then they had a disagreement, and now we have what we have at the moment. Is there any sign, are there even peace talks going on, or any efforts being made by any government to do that?
Well, I mean, there are attempts to restart peace talks. So far, unfortunately, they've largely failed. I know that the US, when I was there, Senator Tom Perriello has been appointed by the US government as a key negotiator. So he's still there. He's very active. He's working with all sides. I mean, the truth is this war is being fueled by outside sources, you know, by countries that are now being accused of fueling arms. So while the peace talks, we need to get them back on the table. Frankly, there has to be an accountability to those countries that are fueling the conflict by supplying arms to both sides. And until that stops, the peace negotiations are not going to be successful.
The people who've fled the country, where have they gone to largely?
The majority of them have gone into the neighbouring countries. I mean, Chad already was home to a very high number of Sudanese. And, you know, I was in Adre and really there were very large camps, which, you know, the Chadian people have opened up their arms to receive these people, but they're really struggling. You know, as we know, the majority of refugees globally, right, are held and housed in countries that are struggling themselves to support their own population. And so this is not any different. The one thing I'll say about the internally displacement, there are millions of Sudanese that are taking in families, are taking in communities that also need support right across the country.
Dominic, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dominic McSorley, Concerns Humanitarian Ambassador and a former country director of Sudan.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.